Techtopia. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. I mange år har vi haft rigtig meget fokus på, hvordan man bygger tech-startups i Silicon Valley, og hvordan vi kunne kopiere deres model til Europa. På det seneste er der kommet en del kritik af, at det er den måde, man tænker på, så måske skal der nye boller på suppen. Hvert år så offentliggør den britiske investeringsfond Atomico en rapport, de kalder The State of European Tech, altså tilstanden i europæisk tech-branche, og det har de også gjort i 2019. Det var femte år i træk, og manden, der som regel præsenterer den, ja, han hedder Tom Wehmeyer, og han kommer fra Atomico i London. Jeg mødte ham til konferencen DLD i Tyskland her for nylig, hvor han fremlagde resultaterne af 2019-rapporten. Og det var helt naturligt at spørge ham, hvordan det ser ud her på femårsdagen for rapporten.
My name is Tom Wehmeyer. I'm a partner at Atomico, and Atomico is a European technology investor, investing in startups all across the region.
And you have been doing this European tech report for five years now. So what have you learned?
Yep, this was the fifth year that we published the report. And this year, I think the thing that really stood out to us was that the rest of the world has finally woken up to everything that is happening around technology in Europe. It's taken quite a few years, but suddenly the eyes of US VCs or, you know, large institutional investors, things like pension funds, have been open to the opportunity here in Europe. And I think that has come about because we've been on a really remarkable journey in terms of the growth and, more importantly, the strengthening of the foundations of the European tech ecosystem. So just to give you a few highlights, in 2019, we saw $35 billion invested into the region's tech companies. To put that into perspective, it was in 2015, so just 5 years ago, that we were really celebrating seeing $10 billion and saw that as a huge milestone. So we've seen a really dramatic increase in terms of the flow of capital into the region. And, you know,
What does this mean? Will it mean the more unicorns, for instance?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's obviously one of the hopes of the investors that are choosing to deploy capital into Europe. Certainly, when we look at what we've seen on that front in the last 5 years, you know, I think there's a good basis to believe that we will see more. So we're at a point now where you have 102 venture-backed technology companies from Europe that have scaled to $1 billion valuation or more, putting them into that unicorn category. When we did our first report, it was just 22. So, you know, really, it's almost one every month in that intervening period. And I think what Europe has been able to prove, and therefore one of the big factors that I think has driven this level of interest and conviction in investing in Europe, is that we've created the conditions whereby we can consistently produce really interesting companies that have the ability to scale to meaningfully large outcomes. And by the way, it's not just companies getting to $1 billion valuation, but we're seeing more companies, whether it's someone like a, you know, a Klarna or an Adyen or a Spotify, scale into, you know, the $5 billion plus and into the tens of billions. So it's a really healthy time at the moment here in Europe. I think we always think that there's three key ingredients to building a healthy tech ecosystem. It's, you know, capital, of course, is one thing. More importantly than that, it's, you know, it's people and talent. And we have, you know, talented people in really large supply. And then finally, it's belief. It's having the right mindset, you know, and we have those three things, and that's why there's so many wonderful things happening.
Ja, der er altså langt mere risikovillig kapital i Europa i dag, end der var for 5 år siden, og det er jo godt, hvis man gerne vil bygge en virksomhed. Der er også vækst i det, man kalder for unicorns, altså enhjørninge virksomheder, og det her startup, som er vokset til at have over 1000 ansatte og en værdi på over $1 billion. Men hvorfor er det så vigtigt med de der enhjørninge virksomheder?
In and of themselves, you know, I think it's, first of all, it's an important demonstration that companies can scale from, you know, what often are small beginnings of just a few people to build organizations that can grow to, you know, hundreds of millions of revenue and thousands of employees and millions of customers in certain cases. And so there's a huge economic impact that comes from that. It contributes to growth, it contributes to job creation. And, you know, I think that's something that we've demonstrated in previous reports, just the critical role that technology is playing generally in terms of driving economic growth in Europe as a whole. You know, typically what we've seen is the tech vertical growing 3 to 4 times faster than the economy as a whole. And so, you know, I think that's one thing. But then I think the emergence of companies and kind of, you know, brands that become familiar to everyone and whose success and whose journeys become something that, you know, we read about in the media is important because it plays a huge role in terms of inspiring a new generation of entrepreneurs. It's, you know, it's that role model effect of demonstrating that, you know, it is possible to take an idea and to turn it into an enduring business that's something that brings the next generation of talent into the ecosystem. And so I think that's something that we think is, you know, is a really critical piece.
En anden ting, der er dukket op i løbet af de 5 år, det er fokuset på klima og bæredygtighed. FN's bæredygtighedsmål er faktisk tænkt ind i forretningsplanen for rigtig mange tech-startups rundt omkring i Europa. Man kalder også nogle af de virksomheder for zebraer, fordi man siger, jamen altså, de er bæredygtige i udgangspunktet, og det handler ikke om, at de skal vokse så hurtigt, som for eksempel en enhjørning skal vokse.
Apart from talking about unicorns, there's a lot of talk about companies that you call zebras these days. Companies with a purpose, companies who are integrating the SDGs into their business plan. So have you looked at zebras as well?
Yeah, so I think this is really one of the big trends that we've seen play through, particularly in the last 2 years or so, which is there's a growing number of European founders who are thinking about more than just commercial success. You know, what's kind of core to their starting values and you know, mission is how can we take on some of these really endemic, huge problems that we face, you know, as humanity, whether it's, you know, societal challenges or environmental challenges. And we see that there are a number of really important forces that are creating massive tailwinds to support the emergence of, you know, more and more of these entrepreneurs and companies that have purpose embedded as a core part of their mission and of their business model. And those things are, you know, when you look at consumer behavior and you look at the choices that consumers make in terms of how they spend, they're increasingly wanting to, you know, open their wallets only for products and services where, you know, they see that they're aligned with the ultimate, you know, mission and values of the company. And similarly, employees, certainly newer generations of workers in the workforce are making choices about the companies with whom they want to work based on how they see an alignment to their own personal ethics and values. And then there's also kind of driving forces in terms of policymakers and the way that capital is being allocated into the ecosystem that means that this is becoming a big trend. And we quantified this in the report and found, you know, a 6x increase in terms of the amount of capital being invested into these purpose-driven companies. And that kind of equates to more than $4 billion in 2019. And I think what's kind of interesting is we actually, you know, the way that we approached this from a methodology perspective was to try to find companies that were taking on one of the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, whether that was, you know, around you know, food and zero hunger, or related to healthcare, or related to climate. And we actually only looked at 7 out of the 17. So we're probably understating the size of the trend. But in doing that research, we found, you know, more than 500 companies that kind of fit this profile. And I think, you know, the word purpose gets talked about a huge amount. You know, we wanted to try and be quite robust in the methodology that we put together. And so we really were quite strict in terms of, you know, which companies made it into that list and which didn't. And so, you know, those companies where we felt that, yeah, you know, potentially there's some sort of, you know, purpose behind them, but perhaps it's kind of more an indirect factor of what they do. And so, you know, if you take, say, a scooter company that, yes, you know, they have fully electric mobility solutions, but ultimately, you know, it's not really kind of core to what they're doing. We didn't include any of those. And those that we did include were all companies where, you know, the mission and the purpose was absolutely critical to what they do and critical to their business model. And in fact, if they don't make a positive impact on, you know, on the problem that they're trying to solve, they will fail. And so I think it's, you know, incredibly exciting to see this capital allocation shift that is happening, where investors are investing through a more, you know, conscious investment framework.
Gennem alle de 5 år, hvor rapporten er blevet offentliggjort, har der været et fokus på, at de europæiske pensionsfonde, som jo sidder på ganske betragtelige beløb, ikke investerer i tech startups, men vælger lidt mere sikre og mindre risikofyldte investeringer. Men nu ser det ud som om, at pensionsfonden er vågnet, og de har fundet ud af, at startups også er et investeringsobjekt, der er værd at tage i betragtning.
When you look at the sources of capital for European venture funds, it's a long way down the list until you get to pension funds as being, you know, one of the contributors. You know, historically, European VCs have raised from, you know, government agencies, from high net worth individuals, from corporate investors, and you've not necessarily seen huge level of commitment from institutional investors like pension funds. That is changing now, and it's changing because, you know, the data speaks for itself. The returns from investing in Europe stand up for themselves now. They're competitive with what you see in, you know, European VC is competitive now from a returns perspective with similar index, you know, indices for and benchmarks for US venture. It's competitive with European private equity. And so what we've seen happen is that as the European ecosystem has kind of proven itself that it can be a really interesting place to invest and to generate returns, then pension funds have kind of woken up, and we've seen a threefold increase in terms of the level of contributions from pension funds to European VCs, more than $1 billion in the most recent period. Now, the reality is that number is still small, and it's small in the context of the, you know, the total assets that European pension funds sit on. You know, last time we looked, it was more than $4 trillion. So, you know, there's still a huge amount of room for growth, and that's exciting. But, you know, we look to the Nordics in particular and see that, you know, certainly I would say Sweden has been a real leader on this front in terms of the level of activity and the level of investment from, you know, Swedish pension funds to support, you know, local and European VCs. And it's great to see that this is happening, because I think they can be a really important kind of, you know, foundational supporter of the ecosystem going forward.
Men ikke alt er fryd og gammel. Tom Wehmeyer, han havde også et budskab til de europæiske politikere, da han fremlagde rapporten på DLD, Digital Life Design, i München i januar.
We think that policymakers can have a huge role to play in the future of European tech. You know, and I think quite simply, we're seeing that tech is sweeping across every industry vertical. And, you know, the more that that happens, the more that technology is kind of becoming a relevant part of the way that industries that have always been heavily regulated, like financial services and healthcare and mobility, the way that those industries work, and it's going to be increasingly important for the tech industry and policymakers to kind of come closer together to engage, you know, more deeply in terms of how they should work together to create the optimal conditions for European citizens, but also the optimal conditions to enable further European tech success. And I think one of the things that we've seen over the last few years is almost a disconnect. You know, it's as I said on stage, it's as if the two worlds have been speaking past each other, and we haven't necessarily seen that close level of engagement. And so, you know, we're kind of excited. It's 2020, it's a new decade, it's the new European Commission term, and this is a chance to bring those two worlds together and hopefully see less discussion in Brussels around, you know, how we tax US tech giants, or you know, maybe that less in terms of the share of discussion that happens. Of course, it's still an important topic. We'd love to see you know, more focus on how Europe and how you know, policymakers can continue to support a European tech ecosystem which has been built bottom up and organically, and which is really demonstrating so many signs of success, but where a closer level of engagement you know, could help propel that, you know, to go even bigger and faster.
I 2018, der målte Atomico for første gang på diversiteten i tech-branchen, det vil sige, hvor mange kvinder er der egentlig i startups, hvor mange kvinder laver en startup, hvor mange sidder i ledelsen i en startup, hvor mange kvinder investerer i startups, og det så ikke særlig godt ud, og det har desværre heller ikke forandret sig i 2019.
In the 2018 report, I think we shocked the industry you know, by putting numbers on the state of play, and I think the number that we shared was in our first report was that 93%, or rather just 7% of all capital invested into Europe went to founding teams that are women or teams where there's, you know, founders of mixed gender. This year we found that number of 7% had gone to 8%. So really no change at all. And so, you know, if the numbers from the first report were shocking, they were similarly shocking this time around. So we haven't seen any meaningful progress in terms of flow of investment. But what we did see were really positive signs, early signs, I should say, that there's a greater level of awareness of this being an important issue for the industry to face. And we do see signs that people are more informed and they feel more empowered to be able to take positive action. We also see that there are signs that, you know, investors themselves are making changes to, you know, to how they operate, and particularly in how they source new investment opportunities to try to drive towards greater balance and equality and inclusion over the longer term. But, you know, I think you have to make no mistake, this is a really difficult road to travel for the industry. And I think one of the things that we found was that whilst it's true to say that some people are making this a priority, that onus to drive change is not shared by all. It's, you know, only being led by some. And in fact, perhaps not surprisingly, but I think, you know, quite disappointingly, we see that the onus to lead this change is falling upon women and people from underrepresented backgrounds themselves. And there were interesting findings from our survey that showed that, you know, when you look at what investors are doing to help build more diverse portfolios, it's women VCs that are disproportionately more likely to be the ones that are taking those positive steps, like running open office hours or attending events where there's more diverse founders, or focusing on sectors where there's greater founder diversity. And so I think it's, you know, we're still at a point where as an industry, we're allowing talent and value to, you know, kind of evaporate away from our industry because we're not making progress fast enough. But at the same time too, we also highlight in the report that we've seen the emergence of a wave of really impactful initiatives to basically strive towards creating a more diverse, inclusive, and you know, equal European tech industry. There's more than 100 that we found, and some of those are doing really amazing work. And I didn't talk about them here at DLD, but when we kind of presented the report at Slush in Helsinki, I mentioned one particular initiative called Inclusive, which actually was only founded in the early part of 2019, but already in just a few short months has managed to have you know, huge impact in terms of putting this topic on the national agenda. And so I think, you know, that's things that we see being mirrored in different, you know, countries across the region. In the UK, there's a lot happening. In the Netherlands is another good example. And so, you know, those are the causes for optimism, but it's still a really, really long way to go.
Hvis man graver dybt ned i rapporten, så finder man ud af, at kvantecomputer, det er faktisk noget, som der bliver forsket og investeret i Europa. Og her faktisk en overvægt af kvinder.
Yeah, I think one of the really interesting findings from the report, and this is kind of like buried right down in the report, but we did some work to look at what's happening around quantum computing. And there were two interesting findings. One is that Europe has seen more investment activity in quantum computing in terms of its share of all investment rounds happen globally than any other region. And so, you know, we're seeing some really exciting companies, you know, being started and being funded in the quantum computing space from Europe. And that shouldn't perhaps be a surprise, because actually there are a number of European research institutes or universities that have long since been at the absolute forefront globally of research into quantum. And I think what's been exciting is that, and this is again another one of the things that we mapped out in the report, is that if we talk about, you know, different groups coming together, and we talked about policymakers coming together with the tech industry, we are seeing academia and research get closer to the tech industry, and that's resulting in, you know, more successful commercialization of, more successful spin-outs from universities, and that's really reflected in quantum computing. The other interesting finding was that when we looked at the diversity of the founders, we actually found that there was a greater level of gender diversity from those quantum computing startups than for the industry as a whole. And I think it was kind of an interesting sort of small data point to dispel the myth that, you know, in those deeply technical areas that, you know, that there are fewer founders from more diverse backgrounds, because actually, you know, in this case, we found that wasn't true.
So more women invest in quantum computing?
So we found that relative to the average, there were the percentage of founding teams from those quantum computing startups that had raised capital was higher, which is great.
Rapporten fra Atomico, The State of European Tech, ja, den rummer utrolig mange flere resultater, end vi lige kunne nå at komme ind på her. Så jeg linker til den fra techtopia.dk. Hvis du har lyst til at høre mere Techtopia, ja, så har vi også et radioprogram på Radio 4, der bliver sendt hver søndag kl. 13.05 og kan findes som podcast på radio4.dk. I denne her uge, der kigger vi på Facebook og Facebooks bebudede kryptovaluta Libra. Hvad går det egentlig ud på, og hvad kan man med den, og hvorfor skal vi have den, og kommer den overhovedet? Og findes der alternativer, for eksempel danske alternativer?
The idea behind Libra is that sending money should be as easy and secure as sending a message. Libra will be a global payment system, fully backed by a reserve of cash and highly liquid assets. Now, I believe that this is something that needs to get built, but I get that I'm not the ideal messenger for this right now. We faced a lot of issues over the past few years, and I'm sure there are a lot of people who wish it were anyone but Facebook who were helping to propose this.
Ja, det var Facebooks stifter og direktør Mark Zuckerberg, vi hørte her, hvor han faktisk er i den amerikanske kongres og bliver afhørt, om man så må sige, eller i hvert fald udspurgt, må man nok sige, af det amerikanske finanstilsyn og finansudvalg. Og han er jo selv i tvivl om, hvorvidt han faktisk har troværdigheden til at introducere en global valuta, som han gerne vil. Men hvad er det egentlig, at Libra går ud på? Måske skulle vi starte med dig, Hans Henrik Hofmeier, fordi du har jo, hvad skal man sige, ben i begge lejre, både i kryptovalutaen og har arbejdet for det mere etablerede system.
Ja, Facebooks Libra er jo en introduktion, som du siger, af en ny kryptovaluta. Nok inspireret af kryptovalutaen Bitcoin, som mange kender. Så i juni 2019, der gik Mark Zuckerberg ud med en såkaldt white paper, som ligesom skulle beskrive lidt omkring tankerne omkring et globalt betalingssystem. Og jeg tror, det er vigtigt i forståelsen af det her Libra, at forstå, at lidt ligesom Bitcoin både er en såkaldt valuta og et betalingssystem samtidig, så er tanken omkring Libra det samme, at det både er ligesom en form for valuta, men det er også en form for settlement-system globalt, som kan flytte penge fra A til B.
Ja, sådan lyder det altså i ugens udgave af Techtopia på Radio 4, som du kan finde på radio4.dk. Jeg har også modtaget et podkort fra Ingeniørens podcast Transformator.
Hvordan bliver vejret mon i verdensrummet de næste par år, når forskellige nationer står i kø for at komme til månen? Det kan vi faktisk sige en del om, når vi analyserer rytmen i solpletter de seneste 250 år. Og hvordan bruger man Einsteins relativitetsteori til at beregne den hurtigste måde at sende flypassagererne ombord på flyet? Og hvordan ville det være at arbejde i et firma, der slet ikke har noget kontor? Tre gode spørgsmål, og vi har gode svar i denne uges Transformator fra Teknologiens Mediehus.
Du har lyttet til Techtopia, den ugentlige podcast fra Ingeniørforeningen IDA. Du kan skrive til mig på henrik@techtopia.dk. Du kan følge os på Twitter på @techtopia.dk. Du kan deltage i teknologidebatten i vores Facebook-gruppe, der hedder Techtopia Backstage. Og så kan du selvfølgelig tjekke alle de gamle afsnit på techtopia.dk. Vi udkommer hver eneste mandag. På genhør i næste uge. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia. Techtopia.